From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We welcome all opinions, you know, except conspiracy theories.
That was Arianna Huffington, the co-founder and former editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post, speaking at a forum at the Republican National Convention in 2008.
If you go backstage to the Huffington Post, if you have a password as a blogger, you see our guidelines. And if you believe that 9/11 was caused by the government, then we're not going to accept your blog post because we believe that facts are sacred. That's part of our philosophy of journalism that we are bringing to new media.
By the following year, Huffington was number 12 in Forbes' first ever list of the most influential women in media. 2 years later, the Huffington Post was sold to AOL for $315 million. AOL made Huffington president and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Media Group, which included the Huffington Post and other AOL properties. In August of 2016, it was announced that she would step down from her role at the Huffington Post to devote her time to a new startup focused on health and wellness information. Meanwhile, it appears that with her departure, the Huffington Post no longer concerns itself with facts. That, according to journalist Joe Loria, who arrived at that opinion based on his personal experience with Huffington Post over the past week. We spoke with him from Cairo via Skype and telephone Monday. So, Joe, I saw this piece at Consortium News, I think it was last week, about a week ago, The Democratic Money Behind Russiagate. And it goes through, you know, some of the things that have come out over the last 2 weeks or so in some considerable depth. And then I saw a discussion on Facebook about a piece that you wrote that you published at Huffington Post and apparently got scrapped. And we just heard a moment ago Arianna Huffington talking 9 years ago about the rules that they use. They don't allow you to have your own facts, but your piece seems loaded with facts. So let's talk about it.
Well, it is. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I wrote the piece originally for Consortium News. Bob Perry, the editor, edited it, and he gave it the headline, "The Democratic Money Behind Russiagate." And you're right, I took the latest developments, and what my article is saying is that there were two main sources for the allegations that Russia influenced the election. And the first, it was CrowdStrike, the analyzer of DNC computers, and the second was the dossier from Christopher Steele, the former MI6 agent. What we learned first was that CrowdStrike was called in by the DNC because they wouldn't let the FBI suspiciously examine their server, their computer server, to see if it was indeed hacked at all. And then they brought in this company called CrowdStrike that is co-founded by Dmitry Alperovich, who is a anti-Putin Russian, who is also a fellow at the very anti-Russian Atlantic Council. Mm. And the CrowdStrike said that their evidence was that in one day they came up with this. They said that the evidence was Cyrillic letters and the fact that they named the first Soviet intelligence agent chief in this. They found this in the metadata. Well, I mean, and they said it was a sophisticated operation by a government. If it were a sophisticated operation, clearly they wouldn't leave those kinds of clues. Yeah, and then we learned later from Voice of America, of all people, they wrote a piece saying that the same software that CrowdStrike used to supposedly discover Russia had hacked the DNC, they used to say that Russia had hacked howitzers on the battlefield in eastern Ukraine. And both the Ukrainian army and the British council, a British think tank, both denied this. So the next day, CrowdStrike rewrote that software. They admitted that it was a faulty software. The second source, of course, is the Steele memos themselves. And I talked about the fact that the Steele memos were not an intelligence document, even though he's a longtime intelligence agent for the MI6, the Foreign Intelligence Agency of Britain. He was the head of the Russia desk for them. But he was working not on a government salary, supposedly serving all of society as an intelligence agent, and his reports being verified and subject to being vetted by his own agency and other agencies, he was doing opposition research, which is a totally different thing.
Right.
He's being paid per piece, so he's motivated perhaps by money. He may have been motivated politically. because Britain was anti-Trump even before, and accused Trump of colluding with Russia even before the Democrats did. And these memos were not seen as credible even by corporate media. We should give them credit, which is rare, because they didn't run with the stories even when the Clinton campaign was shopping it around throughout the summer of 2016 and the fall.
Okay, we're talking they here about that. Right.
They saw this as opposition research, which is dirt for a political campaign. Who's working for a political candidate, not for government anymore? And the really big bombshell was the Washington Post mainstream source, if there ever was one, that said that the Clinton campaign paid for and the DNC paid for Steele, with the intention, the New York Times reported, to link Trump to Russia,
right?
Which goes all the way back to the Cold War. Well, of course, even Bush, even Hillary Clinton's husband, if you remember, George H.W. Bush, tried to condemn Bill Clinton during the campaign because he spent a week as a student on vacation in Moscow during the Cold War. So this is a time-honored Cold War tactic and political campaign. Since we're in a new Cold War, it makes sense it was revived. So the whole idea was to link Trump to Russia from the beginning, and both the CrowdStrike and the DNC, and the Steele memos were paid for by the DNC, and the Steele memos also by the Clinton campaign. So they were behind both of these. This is what I'm basically arguing. And then I also, in the piece, talk about the consequences of this campaign, and that was a new McCarthyism, where anybody who questions this story or any kind of thing about attacks on Russia is immediately labeled a Putin stooge or a dupe or a useful idiot. And we knew about the Washington Post publishing that piece at the end of last year, in which they listed people, listed publications that they claimed from an anonymous source were Russian agents. And then a new study, a new list came out a couple of weeks ago by an outfit called European Values. The writer has also worked for the Atlantic Council. Right. And she has a list of 2,000 or more individuals, including David Ignatius, one of the most CIA-friendly columnists there is, and David Stock, who was the head of the opposition research for Clinton, and Secretary General Antonio Guterres. All these are considered useful idiots for Russia because they've appeared on RT. Yep. This is the kind of nonsense that has come out of this Russia allegations, which have no hard evidence yet. That's the point I'm making. When it appears, I will believe it. I will accept it. But I think being a skeptic is the right thing to do, especially now that we know that the two main sources for this were the Steele memos and the CrowdStrike probe of the computer. And also, in the update for the Huffington Post, I included testimony from Comey and Clapper, in which they both said, alluded to the fact that the Steele memos formed the basis for the January 6th assessment. Now, this is key because that was the real, you know, the three agencies, handpicked analysts, who said that Russia had hacked the computers and had used their influence operations to change this election for Trump. And we know now that the Democrats paid for both of those, and there's no hard evidence, and that's why there was no hard evidence in the January 6th dossier of the three intelligence agencies, because they must have realized this was a very dodgy dossier. And they have said, and Clapper said on the record in that brief, in that testimony, that they have not verified what he wrote. So it's a piece of opposition research. Now, I published the updated version with these things I'm saying about Clapper and Comey for the Huffington Post. I also included the stories of the Manafort and Papadopoulos indictments, because they happened after the consortium piece came out. And basically, I'm saying that the only campaign that received dirt on the opponent was the Clinton campaign, because they actually paid for it, whereas the Trump campaign was twice offered it by a British entertainment promoter and then by this professor in the Papadopoulos indictment. And in either case, we know, as has been proven, that any dirt was ever turned over. So, and it's not illegal to get opposition research from a foreign source, from a foreign individual or government. That's not illegal. If it were, the Clinton campaign would have broken the law. And finally, in the article, I talk about the dangers that this whole story brings in terms of a possible confrontation between Russia and the United States, and what that implies in terms of the weapons both sides have, and that the United States has been trying to get back to a Yeltsin figure in Russia, because it was in those days that they controlled and dominated Russia by with alliances with oligarchs and what Yeltsin, to asset strip the whole country, impoverish the people in a rich Western capital. And also, the fact is that the U.S. helped Yeltsin get reelected. This was published in Time magazine. Everybody knows this.
Front page.
So this is what happened.
It was on the front cover of Time magazine. And they announced it, basically.
So that's an overview of the articles. Now, what happened was I posted it myself on the Huffington Post because I am a contributor. I've been contributing to the Huffington Post for about 10 years at least. And their system now is that you can post your own articles directly to the site. That's the way it actually used to be in the beginning. So I posted it under the new headline of On the Origins of Russiagate. And it was up there for 23 hours when I learned it was pulled down. I was never contacted by anyone from the Huffington Post. And that's a violation, in my opinion, of a newsroom rule, which is before you retract a piece, you contact the writer. And it's called due process. They never gave me a chance. They never gave me a chance to defend what I'd written, even though the article is full of links. And I have more corroborating evidence that I could produce if they'd asked me. Right. And they never said a word to me. They just pulled it. And I only learned why they pulled it, because they issued a statement, not to me, but to Peter Perlberg, who is the BuzzFeed media reporter. He contacted the Huffington Post, asked why they'd pulled my piece, and they issued a statement. And the statement says that it was posted by me, self-published by me, by Mr. Loria, and was flagged by readers. And after deciding that the post contained multiple, factually inaccurate or misleading claims, our editors removed the post for our contributed terms of use. Now, what was that Arianna Huffington told you?
Yeah, that no one's entitled to their own facts. That's what she said.
But only conspiracy theories they won't allow.
That's right.
Do they think they did not accuse me of a conspiracy theory in this statement?
Right.
There are plenty of, it's a factually based analysis. I can understand why a Democratic site like, establishment Democratic site like the Huffington Post would not agree with my analysis or my interpretation of the facts. But to accuse me without contacting me, giving me a chance to defend myself, that there is factual inaccuracies in this story, I don't, of course, don't believe there are, but I want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, you would think that there would be an item.
I'm contacting them now to find out, and I do not believe they will answer me. I'm going to contact them and ask them what were the factual inaccuracies.
Yeah, you would think you'd be entitled to a detail. Here are the factual inaccuracies. And then, perhaps give you an opportunity to say, oh, well, I said that this happened. They claim that it didn't. Here's a photograph of it happening. You have an opportunity to try the facts, basically. And that step was skipped over entirely. It's troubling on so many levels. You mentioned the fact that you have maybe World War III looming in the background as a consequence of this whole Russiagate thing. And also, that what this means for journalism, this kind of treatment, with the Huffington Post, if nothing else, is pretty widely read, all things considered, for new media. And, this kind of, lack of process and the lack of concern over facts is troubling. But there's another thing, too, inside of this, where you have the DNC paying for this oppositional research that is then used as the basis for FISA wiretaps against the Trump campaign. And now, at the time that you had this going on, you have a president who's Democratic Party president, like Hillary Clinton, came out in an unprecedented manner to support her, promised people abroad that Trump would not be elected, said publicly to leaders in Europe that this wouldn't happen, sits on top of the intelligence agencies that are conducting FISA warrant wiretaps on the leading people in the campaign based on, induced by this quote-unquote evidence that was paid for by the Democratic National Committee. I mean, if you compare that scenario to what Nixon was driven out of office over, Nixon looks like an amateur.
Yeah, it's really horrendous. And also, you remember Obama left clues everywhere in all the agencies so they can pick this up.
Yep.
When Trump took over. No, I mean, it looks very, very bad right now. I think there's a very good chance that the Mueller investigation will find some financial crimes like the ones that he's charged Manafort with. It could even engulf Trump in this. He may be tied up with some gangsters. I don't think they will prove, because so far we've seen no evidence, that Russia hacked the emails and that Russia in any way really contributed to Trump's election.
But when you confront this kind of zealotry, this kind of quasi-religious faith, then you're faced with what I think I was just faced with at the Huffington Post, which is they don't want to hear it. They cannot hear it. They're impervious to reason or facts that they don't, that are inconvenient for them to have to hear. And I think this is what's at the basis, although I don't know, but I suspect the Huffington Post will not respond to my requests for the reasons why they pulled the piece, why they feel certain parts were inaccurate. I want to know what they were. I want a chance to defend myself. They're not going to put the piece back up, but I have a right to know the reasons why they pulled it and what the wrong facts supposedly are. And I don't anticipate that. So I just think they don't want to hear them. They're shutting it out.
Yeah. You know, not for nothing. If it were true that Russia hacked the election, quote unquote, or swung the election with $100,000, I'd want to have them do my media buy. Whenever, you know, I want to sell Buicks or whatever, I'm hiring Russia. Take my ad campaign, because that's really a lot of bang for your buck as opposed to $2 billion, which is what people estimate, you know, Clinton spent, you know, between her and the, you know, the private money, the, you know, hidden money.
There's another thing that I included in the update in the Huffington Post from the Steele memo, in which he quotes Source E, which he says is an ethnic Russian close to Donald Trump, telling him that he knows that Russia hacked the DNC computer. Now, one thing, if it was a Russian intelligence operation to hack the DNC computer, it would be on a need-to-know basis. And why would anyone from the Trump campaign need to know that, so that they may talk? There would be no need to have involvement of Trump campaign officials in a hack, which is remote, most likely from outside the United States. It doesn't make any sense. The only thing they are alleging is that these emails were offered to Papadopoulos, George Papadopoulos' low-level Trump foreign policy advisor, but they were never produced. Just like the dirt that was supposedly going to go to Don Jr. was never produced. In that meeting with the lawyer, the one that everyone, like Rachel Maddow and the others, foaming at the mouth to say was smoking gun. But there's no evidence that any dirt was turned over. And even if it had been, it's not illegal. And the fact is that Hillary Clinton's campaign did get dirt from Russia through Christopher Steele.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's just unbelievable.
You know, so we're talking about two things here. One is the hacking of the DNC computers. And that, everybody's accusing, Trump of doing it, saying that they can get them, because that's a crime. Hacking somebody else's computer, taking the information, publicly distributing it is a crime. And if it happened across national or even state borders, federal jurisdiction, FBI. DNC did not turn the computers over to the FBI. Instead, they hired somebody to look at it and do the quote-unquote forensics. That's the first thing. So there's no objective party, even if you're going to say the FBI is objective, but not even a nominally objective party that's producing the evidence for this. No one's done, the FBI has not done the forensics on those computers. And then, as you mentioned, you have Cyrillic alphabets, you know, basically left on the scene, like somebody had cut out from a Russian magazine some letters and, you know, left them at the crime scene, you know, and not for nothing again. Ukrainian also uses that same exact alphabet, more or less. There are a couple of letters that are different, but it's a Cyrillic alphabet. And so the fact that there's a Cyrillic alphabet there doesn't even tell you which side of the Russia, anti-Russia, you know, chasm these people fall down on. And as a matter of fact, if you're looking at the politics, it's quite possible that someone from Ukraine could be doing this because of their fight with Russia, and further, because of Manafort's connection to Ukraine.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Ukraine, because there's a lot being made of the fact that at the Republican convention, the platform plank was changed to no longer call for the provision of lethal weapons to the Ukrainian government to fight people in eastern Ukraine who were defending their democracy, because the guy they elected was overthrown in a coup that the U.S. helped And that was Obama's position as well, not to send lethal weapons.
Right.
So it was not a radical move on the Republicans' part, but they're trying to say there's a quid pro quo there, that they would give dirt on Clinton, or that they had some financial or other blackmailable material on Trump that they would withhold if the Republicans promised not to, you know, provide lethal weapons to Ukraine. But again, that was Obama's position. That is not, you know, that is not proof of any kind of bribery, in my opinion. But we'll see what Mueller comes up with. But the only crimes really are, aside from any financial crimes, the hacking of the computer. That's correct.
Yep.
Nothing else is a crime here. You could collude all you want, as long as you're not colluding to commit a crime.
Right.
Collusion is not a crime by itself.
Right.
And, you know,
that doesn't seem to matter to the mainstream press.
That's right. There is no statutory prohibition against quote unquote collusion. And
correct.
You know, you mentioned before also, if there were the intent, say, in the Russian government to help Trump win, and if they stole the DNC materials or got their hands on them through whatever method, it is not at all necessary to tell Trump other than letting him read about it in the New York Times when it's released, which is as much coordination as you would need, and now you don't have any fingerprints all over it. Someone
exactly.
that you would think is smart enough to do the hacking, to win an election with $100,000, all of that, probably could figure that out and also figure out there's no point in having someone pull something from a platform of a political campaign because they have nothing to do with the policy that will be implemented when that person takes office.
Exactly. That's really chicken feed stuff there.
Yeah.
A platform at a convention, really.
Please.
We could see how they let Bernie's people go in there. And even then they fought them.
Right.
But that was the bone that they threw to Bernie to support her. You know, that he would have an input on the who cares about platforms?
Really? Nobody.
I mean, nobody. Once the election's over, the platform is totally forgotten. Nobody's sitting around reading a platform to say, did they implement what they said they were going to? No.
Right. And, you know,
no, it doesn't work like that.
If it did work like that, we would be living in a world full of peace and milk and honey because they've been promised for generations in those platforms.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Ray McGovern because he took up my calls on his blog, raymcgovern.com. Mm. It's gotten almost 1,400 hits, this piece. And he has a link there that his son was able to make from the PDF that I saved from the original Huffington Post article, the one that was pulled. I made a PDF of it, and
wow.
He and Ray's son put it online so it could be read. If you go to raymcgovern.com, it's a top story. It's the top story right now in his blog, and there's a link to the actual story that no longer exists, and I believe it was censorship because it was for political reasons that this was pulled. And it's interesting that Huffington Post statement says that readers complained. I would love to know who those readers were. If there was anyone in the Democratic establishment or whoever it was, they took total precedence over a writer of theirs who wasn't even contacted to be asked to defend what I'd written, which I'm absolutely prepared to do. And it's already defended in the article itself with all many, many links that I have.
So, and you've been writing about this stuff for a while, and it appears in a number of platforms, aside from Consortium News and Huffington Post. Some of the other places that people can find your work, why don't you maybe point our listeners to that?
Well, those are the two main places right now. I'd written for, my Consortium News stories. I picked up sometimes by Global Research, by
right.
Common Dreams,
right.
By various blogs. And, you know, I once wrote 6 years for the Wall Street Journal, which may be coming to surprise some people.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
So I have a long, long background in corporate media, and I'm not a partisan because I dislike intensely both parties.
Yeah.
And there is no party, in my opinion,
right. Yeah.
that represents me and my interests and the interests of millions of Americans. It doesn't exist.
Right.
So I'm free to step outside of this partisan debate because I don't like either one of them. And certainly don't defend Donald Trump in any way and did not support him, and I can't stand him. But I'm a reporter, and I look for the facts. And this is what's so ironic about this. They're saying the facts are wrong. If you follow the facts logically and you're not blinded by a partisan position, then you will come to this conclusion. Now, it's true. Fox News sometimes get some things right on this Russia thing, but they're motivated by for partisan reasons, and I don't agree with that at all. And I don't feel any affinity for right-wingers who sometimes like some things I write about Hillary Clinton, including the book that I did based on her, on those WikiLeaks emails called How I Lost to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Julian Assange wrote the foreword, and that is like, if they see that, the Democrats are going crazy. So,
you know,
they hate his guts. And
we spoke about that book, a while back, and after it came out. And I'm wondering, because your book, How I Lost by Hillary Clinton, came out before hers. Have you considered an action for a copyright violation?
No. No, but in fact, republishing those emails is a shaky thing to do, because she still owns the copyright on the emails. They are stolen.
Yeah.
But under the First Amendment, you're allowed to publish even if you didn't do the stealing. Stealing is the crime.
Right.
Not the publishing, at least up until now.
Right.
But we hear Pompeo and others in the Trump administration who really seriously maybe wanting to go after journalists this time. It's been talked about since Nixon and before that journalists should be prosecuted too for publishing it. Maybe they always stop short because of the First Amendment, and I'm hoping that's going to happen again.
Well, the New York Times, it chilled the New York Times when Ellsberg and all of them came with the Pentagon Papers. It took a while to get that stuff out, and even reading it into the congressional record.
Well, I wrote a book on Mike Gravel, who's the son of Mike Gravel.
That's right. He did.
Congressional record.
Yep.
From his point of view, the entire Pentagon Papers story, and Dan Ellsberg wrote the foreword for our book. For that. So, yes, that was a really solid case, but it could happen that they will go after journalists, you know, in some way. And this is the reason why still Julian Assange is remaining in the embassy in London.
Yeah, with Julian Assange.
You know, I have to say, Don, I've been out of the country a while now. I'm talking to you from Cairo. And seen from abroad, it's really scary what's going on, let alone the almost normal normalization now of mass shootings, which is in itself just so horrendous. And the reaction to it is even scarier to me, that it's just sort of being accepted somehow.
Right.
But the political situation now, what I just experienced with this, what I really believe is censorship, the absolute madness of both sides in the political debate now. I've not seen anything like it since the Vietnam War. I was in my teens. But I think that was a real debate about a war. This, I don't understand this at all. Can you enlighten me what the situation is there?
If I could understand it, I would. It's the same. There's somewhat of an apparent schism between, say, the entire U.S. media on the one hand, except for Fox, and Fox on the other, where it seems like everyone at CNN, CBS, Democracy Now, wherever, wakes up in the morning and says, okay, we're going to tell everybody that this is why Trump, you know, stinks today, and that's going to be the focus of all of their news coverage. And Fox will say this is why they're good. But it comes down to, for example, Trump is no good because he's a Russia dupe, and Fox saying, no, Clinton is a Russia dupe. And that's the break in it. But looming right behind that is an assumption that Russia is the enemy and somebody's a dupe and we got to do something about it. And so that's kind of what's going on here. I don't know how to summarize it more than that.
I just saw a headline that Carter Page wanted to set up a meeting, a speech by candidate Trump in Russia. Now, if he was going to talk about detente, I think that would be wonderful.
Absolutely true.
But well, why is this any meeting that was held with a Russian? Now, I'm in contact with Russians every day. No, so I better tell the FBI the truth if they ask me. Otherwise, they're going to get me for lying, right? This is basically what they got Papadopoulos on.
Right.
And now, so there's a meeting with a Russian. So what? The meeting itself is not a story. You see, this is where we've gotten with the corporate coverage of this whole thing. That if there's a meeting, that becomes a big story. But what happened at that meeting? Was there some kind of criminal activity that went on? Is there a No, it, you know, they just had a meeting, so that becomes a
you
big
know,
story. A big
let's
headline.
go back
they
to July. Go back to July of 2008, with fanfare typically orchestrated for a visiting head of state, Senator Barack Obama dashed through a series of meetings with the Israeli and Palestinian leaders.
There you go.
Okay, but we're out of time. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, a little bit.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.